talking wrestling and all these different things. And my guest today is Spiffy Sean Styles. Welcome to Neil Haley's show. Go figure, you would have thought I walked away, went to Steel City Wrestling with Norm Connors, and when that notorious Norm, and you would have thought I'd be a media guy, right? I guess I look at it, people, even though, you know, we really don't talk anymore. I think Aaron Lester had a lot to do with teaching me the media when I was doing the radio stuff and running the Devereaux committee in the back. And then go figure, at one point I would be doing radio like I'm doing and podcasting and social media and everything. And that's why I'm the media giant. But Sean, tell me that story. Let's talk about how you started at PWX. You went in your wrestling career. Now music's your big thing. But let's kind of go to that story.
Well, first and foremost, Neil, thanks for having me on your show. Yeah, I mean, this is a 25-year in the making story for you and I, who back in the, this would have been the late 90s for PWX, as I, as a recently graduated high school kid, came back to Pittsburgh and saw this weird local access sort of like independent wrestling show that was on at 1 a.m. on Saturday nights, I think.
No, you're giving it. I'll give you, it was about 11:30 at night on 22. It was pretty cool, you know? And yeah. And you got to remember the gun rack for sure. And all those different, but you're watching it and you said to yourself, what, after seeing that on the,
so I was, this was, you know, Attitude Era. I was a fan, obviously, as wrestling was hot back then. That's the heyday of The Rock and Stone Cold and all of that on television. So me being a fan, I was writing. This is the dawn of the internet as well. So I was writing for a couple of wrestling websites just as a fan, but giving my perspective that way. When I moved back to Pittsburgh, saw this this television show, showed up to one of the events. Very old school kind of breaking into the business. Hey, my name is Sean. I want to be a wrestler. I want to be involved. How can I help? And you know, if you know Jim Miller, if you know Pittsburgh wrestling, they're more than happy to take your free labor. So I ended up sweeping some floors and selling some candy back in the old Eastland Mall. And
right.
As it kind of progressed, you know, hey, we need a ring announcer for this show. Hey, do you want to do a couple backstage interviews for the TV show? Hey, do you want to, you know, try commentary? And I just got a real good kind of crash course in a lot of different areas of the wrestling business, just being willing to learn first and foremost, and then being around guys at that time that were very, very helpful, willing to kind of teach back then. And then at one point they realized that I'm also 6'1" and 240 pounds. And, they wanted to practice some moves on me. So as I was there, I became a tackling dummy for about 6 months of practice and training, and eventually learned how to wrestle myself. So that was kind of the graduation from doing a lot of the behind the scenes stuff and the television side of things to being an actual performer as well. But this was always what my dream job was going to be.
Right.
I went to college for broadcast communications. I was going to be the next Mark Madden in Pittsburgh, you know, and you mentioned Steel City Wrestling. And I know Double M was a big fan of Madden there.
Madden was doing the commentary. I got to find those videos. So that goes back to once I announce this documentary next week, it'll be going up on Indiegogo. I'll wait till next week. A big announcement. If you watch my show streaming live, as I'm doing the streaming live, and the reason I'm doing it is for 1080 quality, I like to always teach people, why am I doing this? You know, streaming live, yeah, I have some platforms that'll be checking it out, especially X does a really good job streaming video. But really, the reason I'm doing it is for 1080 quality. That's why I left the Zoom, where you get this horrible 720 downloaded quality when you want to create video and you want to get to even a higher level, and for sure. But no, you're right. And so let's talk Mark Madden. I walked, and the reason I walked is because Jim Miller put a contract out, right? The 180 miles. And I can't believe people like T. Ranchula and Zoltan kept that contract. I told him to go F himself. And Jim and I work tight now. We're talking, but hopefully he watches this. I told him to go F himself. I'm not going and signing a contract. But, you know, hindsight being 2020, then you guys got the deal with NWA. And I didn't look at that, but if I looked at my career and we were talking backstage or whatever, or in the green room, I said to you, well, even though I walked away from PWX, went to Steel City, kind of didn't get really pushed, started running shows with Comer. I was working Grand Rapids, Michigan, won the title over Rhino, was doing tours for Ike Shaw in Canada, working with a lot of the guys, you know, ran into, you know, Christian before he was Christian, you know, Edge wasn't on the tour, but also Test was on the tour with me there. And they were looking to give me a big Germany push. And then I had the big run of, they were trying to give me a Nazi gimmick. And then I had the big run of going to work in Germany. And then I walked the hell away at my prime, right? Said, I'm just done. I'm out. You know, I did TV once for WWE, but I ultimately thought, and I look back at all this and I said, it was the greatest decision I made, but let's go to your story. Once it became NWA, that's when you really started to get a good run, right, in wrestling.
It did. I mean, it's one of those things, back to the contract, just because of, you probably made the right call, but looking and, you know, and
I mean, if we look at the wrestling business now, who knows, because it's all about politics. And I might not have got as far as I got. You know what I mean? Anyone that could say, I don't know. There's a lot of guys that say worked at the Catch Cup. I was in Catch and I worked. That was my last show, was in Germany. You know, that was a 10-day tour. And I don't think a lot of guys can say they worked for, you know, the next level. Next is Japan. That was the next four. And I'm talking a real Japan, not, oh, I'm going to go work at some little local Japan organization. If I would have stayed, I probably would have went to Puerto Rico or Japan. So that's where that phase at that time during the Attitude Era was going.
It was because that was some of the stuff that getting to work with Samu and some of his contacts, that was there as well. So the NWA was great at that time. It was a great way. I wish the timing was better for me as a young, you know, kind of wrestler. Like if I knew now, you know, then what I know now kind of thing, I could have taken advantage of that a little bit better as well. But yeah, getting an opportunity to go wrestle down for the NWA when they had just started doing TNA and had the weekly pay-per-views at that point, we would go down and that would be a Wednesday show. So we would go down and wrestle for the pay-per-view events on Wednesday at the Nashville Fairgrounds. And then we would do a loop down through Alabama and get to wrestle all these guys. And it's still very kayfabe, very old school. Good guys in another locker room. And you don't get to talk before the match. You just got to go out and kind of go do it. You know what I mean? And it's missing a lot in today's product. That ability to kind of read the crowd and kind of adapt on the fly and kind of like ad lib, kind of like feed in a little bit. So it's one of those things where you see some of the guys that can still do it, like the Randy Ortons of the world that still have that skill set, but it's diminishing more and more as you see the product on television look a little more, I don't want to say choreographed, but a little
I think
more
it's opening up to professional wrestling. I want to establish, at least in the documentary I'm going to do, what OVW did, but it's going to be a lot more shoot than OVW. I'm not going to protect the business. There you go. I'm not going to protect the business about some of these people around the stories. We're going to be going at each other. We're going to talk about the heat that was in the 90s. A lot of the guys I worked with, from Dundee to Lawler to PG-13 to all these guys, they're all going to be part of this and they have no idea what's going to happen. And they probably won't go back to this. So like Rhino and I, we wrestled, you know, I won the title against Rhino before Rhino was Rhino, right? Rhino got me to Germany.
He's a sweetheart. You can't, there's no story about guy. Rhino. Everybody
fantastic.
Loves Rhino.
No, he's an amazing guy. Adam Pearce, which I'm shocked about. Adam and I traveled together, worked in St. Louis with a steel. So look, then I was the Wichita heavy. So I think Ace maybe went out, and that was when I was working with Cowboy Bob Orton, Steve Murphy in St. Louis, Missouri. So I really did not stay, you know, close to Pittsburgh. I go work Pittsburgh one night, and then the weekends I'm in these other towns. Go ahead.
You know, back then there was PWX and there was Steel City, but there wasn't really until IWC kind of formed out of the ashes of Steel City. You really didn't have a real big hotbed in Western Pennsylvania wrestling at that time. Now it's a little bit better, but back then, you know, and it's still like this today. A lot of guys still don't travel, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of guys that are completely content.
If they're not traveling, they're not working 3 nights a week, they're never going to make. Because the bottom line, I mean, you look at, so I watched the documentary CM Punk. If anybody said something, what CM Punk was able to do, and the fact that he kept working so many places,
he made towns,
get
man.
Himself over,
he made
and
towns.
He really worked hard. You look also at how Cody Rhodes went from, you know, being in one of the best in WWE to working in front of 60 people, and then brought himself back out of the ashes to where he is today. This should be two lessons of guys saying, I don't know why I'm going to go work three times. I'm not going to go work for this price. You know, the ECW guys, none of them got paid if you go back into the Paul E's days. And I didn't even know that. Yeah. I literally didn't know the ECW guys weren't getting paid, because I got paid when I worked for Burt. I got paid when I worked for USWA. It's $40.
Yeah,
I got paid when I worked for Burt. Some days it was $25. Some days it was $70. Some days it was $75. When I worked the Indies, I got paid $100. This is the worst. And now when you hear the numbers, same price that we were getting paid in the 90s is what guys are getting paid.
If the music business is like that,
what
happens is it's like the music business is very much the same way, Neil, where you get a little saturated, where you get these, I don't want to say local guys, but you get guys that are willing to work for nothing. And that kind of knocks it down. So you can go in there and have your price and everything like that. And it's harder to justify that price when you can get, you know, guy off the street that's willing to do it for free and set the ring up. And he's also going to sell 20 tickets to his family. Yeah. And, you know, there's a place for those guys.
No, that was just happened. All right. So let's go. You were in NWA East. You had a big run in NWA East. You went.
That was when there were guys down there.
Like
too.
Kind of enhancement when you were at TNA.
Yeah. Oh, I got to work with a lot of the better guys on there. That was the AJ Styles, young AJ Styles. Air Paris was there. That was before they had a quick run at WCW right before it folded.
Burt and Music City kind of developed TNA, didn't he?
Yeah.
And that's another dumb mistake. I left Burt. So I left Burt and Jim. So, okay. I was Burt's right-hand man with Colorado Kid. And I freaking was running the off help. I learned the office from that, and then don't know shoots on that, but that's meaning because you know what I mean. But Colorado and we're still in touch, and we're looking to have a match. Colorado Kid.
I used to love being down there, and we would see Mike Colorado Kid doing these like car commercials. He was a star. He was a star there too.
Then I came to PWX and I was a star with Bubba, and we had the most heat in the building. And when I left, the house dropped by 40%.
Oh man.
That was after Jim, but it goes back to because they wanted the heat, and you know, you have to have someone with heat. And if you don't know how to get old school heat, that's the problem. All these guys, I felt like I had that. JB and I were talking about that as well, as JB was saying some stuff. All right, so let's go back really quickly. NWA East,
right?
Your biggest run when NWA East, because I remember I came back for the Sean Shocker Evans. I came back three or four times.
Right.
One was for Sean Shocker Evans tournament. When after he passed, they did the tournament. How long were you in NWA East for?
I'm trying to remember how long of a. Because Jim had it for a few years, I think, where he...
I know when it was the tournament.
I'm trying to remember the timeline. But it was a few years.
That was in NWA East.
This would be in the early 2000s. It would have been where it was the dawning of TNA. It was still the quote-unquote territory system that they were doing with the NWA, where he had, Wildside World, down there in Nashville. Right. You had Jim up here. There's Jersey. I forget who was over there. There was a few. Arpin, I think, had one for a little while. But it was doing okay.
Oh, good old Arpin. God rest him in peace.
Awesome Arpin. Away, actually.
I did so many jobs for Awesome Arpin when he brought out the whole USA deal. And oh my freaking God. And I wrestled in Parkersburg and I did all the towns. I knew Arpin before he got the NWA deal.
I remember.
And I didn't know he became a drug dealer after that and the whole big deal after that. Oh my gosh. Scotty McKeever. I'll bring up all these old names. And is McKeever dead?
McKeever passed away four or five years ago. He passed away.
He was interesting. I just reached out. I'm talking to so many guys that are still left. Andy Vinenberg's the one that got me into the business. And he's running.
That was my first run, was actually, even though I trained at PWX, I wrestled my first matches for Mason Dixon Wrestling. So I was wrestling in West Virginia before Jim ever let me on a show. Like, so that was I got to go down there and wrestle for Jim Hawkins was the promoter there.
Yep. I worked for Jim too.
And
Arpin hated when I worked for Hawkins.
Yeah.
I remember all these deals, man.
I was talking to another giant of the industry, my buddy Drew, at the time.
You're talking about Hotshot Drew Lazario.
No, right here, but not that Drew. Gallows in the WWE. I wrestled him in his first match ever. Actually, I think Jim Hawkins always used to, for some reason, love having the referees win battle royals. He thought it would pop him, so we'd always have the ref be the, you know, whatever. So Drew Gallows was wrestling for him, just broke in, and we got a chance to wrestle with each other. And Drew and I still stay in touch. He was out for New Japan, actually, before they went back to the I still call it the Fed, because old school. Before they went back to the WWE, he was wrestling in New Japan. They had a show out in Philadelphia. Him and I got a chance to connect, and we did he has a podcast, or him and Chad had a talk and shop they would do, where basically they just, you know, drink beer and
what year was that when you were working for Hawkins?
That would have been 2000. That would have been Drew's 2002, I want to say, three.
Yeah, see, I walked away 99, November, Bremen, Germany, full time. So this is the gimmick I'm saying, coming back to wrestling full time.
What brought this on, by the way? Because
walked away from the business in 99, way back machine, and I'm going to recreate everything because I'm the media giant. But we'll talk about that further another time. So, okay, let's talk music.
What is possessing you to want to do this again? Like
branding. I'm not stupid. Brand. How can I differentiate myself with Gary Vee, Alex Hormozy, Grant Cardone? Because I want to go to those guys. They're not going to wrestle.
No.
And I meet all these different guys and have these conversations. Like, I had the guy who won the Voice, and he says, "Can you choke slam me?" We're still reaching out on Instagram. That's before I decided to make the comeback. Imagine putting him in the ring against me. You just never know what kind of things. I even challenged one of the people from Little House on the Prairie, the bad girl from Little House on the Prairie. You know who I'm talking about, the one that was the big star in Little House on the Prairie.
No, I've
never watched Little House on the Prairie.
I'm a 90s kid.
Okay, so what happened? Why did you go? I transitioned from wrestling to teaching and then back to entertainment, now my industry. What about you? You transitioned to music. I transitioned
to music, yeah. So it was, as you alluded, the money was not super back in the 90s and 2000s, and it's still not super.
You basically got to be able to make it, and it's still not super. You got to be going to the top stars.
Well, here's the good news. What you're seeing now, and you brought up Cody Rhodes, you could bring up Matt Cardona, and there's a lot of guys that were television guys for the WWE that now are doing better on the independents, because they're able to manage their own side hustles. Like you're mentioning that stuff. They've got their OnlyFans stuff, or they've got their, you know, their t-shirts, and they've got their other things they're doing where they're making more money. They've got more freedom to do different dates. They're their own bosses, you know, so that's nice to see. So there's a new model for that to happen, where you're seeing these top independent stars that aren't on TV every week that are still doing, you know, good six figure,
or even AEW letting the guys work out outside of AEW.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal to offer that, you know, where, you know, if you don't have the WWE kind of machine with you, to be able to go to AEW, but also be able to go to Japan, to also be able to do some independents, to also be able to do, you know, your outside work or your Twitch streams or your, you know, whatever you're doing for additional revenue streams, and have it not be a problem with the office. It's an evolution for the business. And I think it's great. You know, it's not, you can't wrestle, you know, 180 miles up the road for another $25. You know what I mean? It's
right. So no, there's definitely money to make in the indies, and it's only a few guys, and they're smart what they're doing, and they get the deals. So you saw music was better. So how did you build this whole music thing?
Like everything else, this was supposed to be just to get free beer and meet girls. The music thing was never supposed to be a career change. It was This would have been 2006. I just graduated college. I had a job out of school doing financial, like mortgage stuff, sales. You know, I was doing, and this is when the real estate market was on fire. It was right before it wasn't on fire, right before 2008.
I remember totally that because I was working the Credit Bureau Columbus at that time, right before I headed to Germany, and I saw the mortgage business explode for a second and then take the dive.
So I'm 23 at the, or whatever I am, and I'm making more money than I know what to do with at that point because it's all just sales and commission, and you're making three points on the back end of all these you know,
good money if you own it, And then the crash.
Then I went to work one day and the doors were locked, and that was over. I had a nice severance package and some time off for the first time since I was 15. So the music stuff was just to get out of the house. It was a hobby. I didn't even know I could sing until I was in college. I went to a Catholic university in Pittsburgh called Duquesne, where one of the things they try to get you to do is participate in mass. The 9 o'clock Sunday night, we called it the hangover mass. And I was in a fraternity where you would sponsor a couple of the masses throughout the semester. And what that means, you just go and you know, the guys in the fraternity are the ushers, and they take up the gifts, and they you need a couple volunteers for choir. Now I'm a man of a certain age and a late bloomer, but I'm in choir now with 14 girls that are paying attention to me because I'm a tenor, and they're very excited to have a boy because they don't often have boys coming to sing with them. So I start showing up more often to do choir stuff, and they teach me how to like read music and just literally old school, like, you know, the music director is tapping out the notes on the piano and saying, you know, okay, sing this. And taught me how to do that when I graduated, met a couple guys and put this band thing together, just playing dive bars, just doing music we liked, a lot of 90s alternative and stuff that we grew up on. As you know, I kind of started to see the business side of it a little bit better. I started seeing, okay, well, if we play, you know, Brown Eyed Girl, we play a little more of these more mainstream popular songs, we might be able to get better bookings, you know, more money. Hey, now we're getting wedding opportunities where that's bigger gigs. Hey, now we're playing these casinos. Now we're traveling. Now we're doing, you know, like now it's, you see the kind of wheels turning where that becomes a viable income stream. So and every time, you know, and you'll appreciate this. Every time I have one of those, like, I'm flying down to Florida in the morning to go down there and do gigs for 2 weeks. But every time I have like a bad travel day, or every time I have a bad gig where there's a guy just yelling Freebird for like 4 hours straight, you know, just, you want to choke him. I remind myself that I could be waking up at 7 o'clock in the morning every day, putting on a shirt and tie and going and sitting in an office at a job that I hate. And there's a lot of people that do that. And the worst thing I have to do,
or they have a day job that really sucks and has no meaning at all.
And you know, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I don't think I ever will, even if I decide that I do want to grow up, which I believe is still a trap.
I created my own universe.
And that's what it is. So it's my
welcome to my world right here. This is it. This is you're in my world, right? And now people could get to see it live stream because I was living in Clubhouse 24/7, 17 hours a day when Clubhouse went and exploded during the post. And I guess I was an OG. I'm still considered one of the OGs on Clubhouse.
You are.
But literally I lived on there for 17 hours a day. Then I said, you know what? I was getting clients, and these clients kept dropping off. They weren't the right people. They were always not wanting to spend. So I said, I'll create my own Clubhouse and start doing more and more podcasting, not just my celebrities, but produce a lot of shows. And then that's what blew up for me. So, you know, that's the power of podcasting, is the power of whatever, but that's great what you're doing. And you just have to see at one point how many years you'll keep performing and traveling.
Well, I mean, till the wheels fall off is kind of like the wrestling business is the same thing. You never really retire because, you know, it's one of those things that can pull you back.
Why did you retire from wrestling?
I still wrestle every once in a while. A lot of it is just schedule. A lot of times your band gigs, your weddings and stuff are usually on Saturdays, which usually is when most wrestling shows are. So just it's hard to book available dates because I'm so booked up with my real job, so to speak. But, I still try to do a few. I run a small nonprofit organization. We try to do one or two shows a year just for fundraising to do that. We had a really nice one last year for mental health awareness stuff we did for kids. But yeah, I still try to stay involved. I had a little run actually with your friend Jim Miller there a few months ago when I had some free time with Aaron Lester was there and a couple of the guys as they kind of were going through a little more of a transition period, which happens a lot for
that. I'll have group. To talk to you off air what happened there. Okay. You'll give me the firsthand experience of that when we get off.
There's a lot of, listen, there's always good people that wanted to wrestle. You know what I mean? And sometimes there's not, but there's always like PWX was always that for Pittsburgh, where you get those Corey Graves, you know, kind of guys coming out of PWX, you know, where they're going to go and do well. And I got to, you know, I ran into Corey a couple weeks ago, actually in the Atlanta Delta Sky Lounge of all places. Both of us had terrible travel days.
Corey literally was in the audience when I was on top and yeah. One of the top stars in PWX. That's just crazy.
Take him down to West Virginia with me because he was only 17 at the time that he was training and he wasn't allowed to wrestle in Pennsylvania, but in West Virginia, no rules. They don't care anything down there. I would take him down. Me, the grizzled veteran I was, you know, 3 years in the business at this point, you know, come on, kid, we'll hop in the van. We'll, you know, so we would go down and he was my tag team partner as we, you know,
I didn't know all these stories. So these are stories that need to be said and seen. But best place people can check you out as you
everywhere. It's at Walk of Shame Band is the band. There's an, all my links for all my social media and everything like that. But yeah, I'm still doing wrestling stuff. I just started doing a lot more with the home studio here for voiceovers, trying to get more involved in some commentary work, some post-production stuff where I can do a little more stuff. We just rescued a puppy, so I want to be home a little more. So I'm trying to figure out ways to be here.
Instead of having to travel so much. Got it. All right.
No, I love the travel, but also, you know, there is a shelf life on that. I don't be the old guy dancing on top of bars, singing, you know, Taylor Swift songs. But I still got good hair. I still look decent. So as long as I can still do that and talk, you know, I've got hopefully another 20 or 30 years of being involved in wrestling, especially because that's, you know, listen, that doesn't leave your system.
That's the big thing. All right. Yeah. Well, sounds good, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Neil. Thank you, man.
You're listening and watching the Neil Haley Show. We'll be back in just a